Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformations. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Life Transformation Radio. I am your host, Master Resilience Implementer, TEDx Speaker, Business Positioning Strategist, and author, Sean Douglas. This show is currently heard in over 70 countries, such as the United States, United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Malaysia, India, and Norway. So I want to thank you to those who are listening from around the world. Life Transformation Radio is all about our transformation. Here is where we tell the stories of why we're doing what we're doing. We highlight that transformational moment that has changed our lives and how we use this to then transform others and elevate their lives as well. You can listen to us right here on the Blog Talk Radio Network Tuesday through Friday. But today is a very, very special episode because I have my good friend and fellow veteran, Daniel Rufino, on the show. So I'm coming to you live right here from North Carolina, where we both live. You can join our Facebook community, Life Transformation Radio Community, and never miss an episode. And I ask that you subscribe to the show wherever you're comfortable listening to podcasts. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn, Player FM, Radio Public, Overcast, CastBox, the Google Play Music app. Wherever you're comfortable listening to shows, please subscribe. On the show, I bring on entrepreneurs, speakers, business owners, coaches, podcasters, authors, amazing people who are impacting the world around them, and my guest today does just that. If you have any questions for anything that you hear on the show during our live broadcast, you can call us up at 657-383-1109. Again, the number, 657-383-1109. And with that, I want to welcome my friend, Dan Rufino, to the show. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. It's been a pretty busy weekend, but I'm ready to take the week on.
Outstanding. Outstanding, man. So we're going to get into your bio in just a second, but I just want to acknowledge you, my friend, because we've been friends for a couple of years now, and you know, you've always been there for me. I try to be there for you. We go to the, you know, the church and the outreach and the military, man. So really, I want to thank you. You know, for all that and give you my gratitude for being an awesome friend and for the work that you're doing inside of the veteran community now that you've, you know, retired and now that you've gone on to do what you're doing, man. You're doing a lot of work in the veteran community, man. I think it's pretty awesome.
Oh, thanks, Sean. I appreciate that.
So let's learn more about Dan Rufino. Dan, okay, for y'all listening before we even get into this thing, I think it's super cool what we're about to talk about today, not only because of the veterans in the military, but I was deathly afraid of being an actor. like as a speaker, I'm good. You know, I'm cool. Like, awesome. I don't have to memorize anything. So let me just preface this with a preface by saying that Dan got me out of my comfort zone more than anybody else. And you'll find out why. The title of this episode is Silent Torment with Daniel Rufino. Daniel is a retired disabled United States Air Force Master Sergeant who served for more than 23 years as an aircraft weapons technician on F-16, B-2, and F-15E aircraft. Daniel retired on 1 August 2015 at Seymour Johnson Air Force Base in North Carolina, where he served the last 12 years of his career. In 2012, Daniel began being involved in community theater when he performed as Porthos in The Three Musketeers. Since that time, he has been in over 20 full productions, several one-act plays, has produced, assistant directed, and has written over 15 one-act plays, a full-length two-act Robin Hood adaptation, and now his original work, Silent Torment. His newest work chronicles veterans suffering from the silent torment known as PTSD and takes the audience through the day-to-day struggles that veterans face. Daniel has performed in several community theaters in North Carolina, his church, and other local churches. Other than theater, Daniel volunteers in his community at his church, the local community soup kitchen, 3HC hospice facilities, and their summer camp, Camp Wings, which serves grieving children. Dan also spends time in the summer volunteering with the MDA at their North Carolina summer camp. In the show notes is CRE Outreach, which is a theater that Daniel will talk about. Blue Door Theater is what is going to be hosting the play. Facebook, Silent Torment, that is where you can learn everything about his full-length production, when and where the show will be, because it's upcoming fast, and you can connect with Daniel there. So with that, I have to ask, man, what is your why? What is your deep, deep why for what you do?
Well, I think it's because I have a passion to communicate a story to people. And that's why when I got into acting, I really felt that it was something that I really enjoyed doing. Because you can be so many different people where you can only kind of give a story from what your own experiences are. But when you act, you give other people's experiences. And so that's why I wanted to kind of expand into areas that I had more experience with. And that's what kind of drove me to do the writing that I did, because I've written several of the 1X based on military stories as well, military families. And that's what kind of got me leaning towards the longer play with Silent Torment. So it's really a passion to tell stories, and that's what's great about acting is you can tell somebody else's story. There's a lot of shows out there that really tell true stories, such as Diary Anne Frank, where you hear about the Holocaust and these real people, and they went through these real struggles. And so that's kind of where I wanted to go with Silent Torment, and so all this has kind of culminated into that show. So that's where it comes from, is that passion to tell that story, whether it's mine or somebody else's.
I like that a lot. And to give a little more context to what I was talking about, you know, I've been a professional speaker since 2009, been a drill instructor, and a lot of people know my story when it comes to alcohol and everything else. And then Dan says, "Hey, you should come be in our play." I'm like, "Nah." I'm like, "Come on." I'm like, "Nah." I'm good, you know. And he's always told me that, man, come to this play and come see this one and do this. And I'm like, yeah, okay, you know. And I was never kind of like, I don't know if it was for me, you know. And he's got an amazing son that is doing some acting and everything. And so it's kind of like the whole family, your kids, your wife, everybody. I mean, they all are in community theater. So Dan says, "Hey, man, there's a show coming up called Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. You'd be perfect for it. You should play Brick." I'm like, nah. So he gets me on stage, auditions, and I freaking got it. So now it's like,
I had a little say in that. I just want to point out, I had a little pull to get that to happen. So
talk about being scared, because the director is like Hitler, but he's really good. But he's really, I mean, he is a drill instructor in theater.
He's intense.
Yeah. So it comes down to it. We're doing this thing, and I absolutely fell in love with it. Was like, oh my God, this is perfect for me.
Yeah, just to point out, though, you weren't jazzed about the whole being half naked on stage. So you weren't excited about that.
Well, yeah. So there's that. Yeah. So the director actually made me, come out in the first like 10 minutes of the play in just a towel. But I did have pajama bottoms that were rolled up. It was super funny. Is backstage, Dan has to bend down and roll down my pant legs under the towel. And I'm putting my top on because I was like chest naked. And everybody's looking, like the first time it happened, everybody's looking like, what the hell's going on back there? Like, shut up. But it was like, it was an experience, and it was a moment that was made. And Dan was like, dude, you'd be perfect for this. Like, this is you. You can do this.
And I was right. Just so you know, I was right.
And he was right. Absolutely, he was right. Ever since then, it was like, oh my gosh. Like, if there's another one, but see, I'm still active duty. He's not. He's got more time than I do. But I see more plays in my future. There was some that we were going to do. Didn't quite work out. There'll be some more plays. So tell me, was theater the transformational moment that happened in your life? Or what was a transformational moment that changed your life, which put you on the path to what you're doing today with the theater, with the work that you do? What was that moment?
I think there was a lot of specific, there was a lot of moments. But I will say that the main thing that really got me moving to wanting to do things that had impacts on other people was when I saw the difference I could make. So I'm not sure if it was a specific moment, but I, at one point in time, decided that I really enjoyed serving other people. I enjoyed seeing people have joy in what I was doing, being able to make them feel good about what they were doing. And I, it's like when I serve at the soup kitchen, I go there because I like seeing the smiles on people's faces. I like to hand them a good meal and know that I can make their day a little bit better just by doing that simple act. And I think there was a pivotal moment in my life where I had a lot of things I was doing and I was busy with all this stuff, but I never really felt like I was making a difference. And so I think that difference moment happened when I realized I had a lot of resources. And like you said, being retired, you know, my wife works and we're pretty good financially. The kids are at school a lot. So I had to figure out what I was going to do with myself. And a lot of people were like, well, why don't you get a job? And I was like, you know, I want to do more with the time that I have. And that's when I was able to write more and be, you know, involved in more things. I do volunteer at 3HC. I get to sit with people that are, you know, in the final stages of their lives, a lot of them veterans, and a lot of them over there sometimes pass away, you know, without having somebody with them. So I'm able to make that difference by being there. And I think that's what I wanted to do, is I wanted to make that difference. And so I can't tell you specifically when that was, but I think it was a big shift in me to say, you know, I'm going to do this for me and have all these hobbies that just kind of are hollow. You know, they don't really serve anything. They're hobbies, but how can I actually use what I have and the resources I have and the things I've been blessed with to bless other people? And that's what I do. That's why I like to serve and I like to volunteer and I like to make a difference. That's kind of where I think it all kind of comes from.
Perfect. So let me ask you, what do you think was your favorite production that you're in? You've been over 20, right? I mean, just the ones that I remember, there was one called Elephant's Eyes.
Yeah,
I think my favorite one that I saw you in was the one that you were like a coroner. You kept getting that guy's name wrong.
Oh no, you saw it. I didn't know you saw that play. That was Dracula Bites.
Dracula.
Yeah. Not the one where I was in the car. Yeah.
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 That one.
You saw that one?
Yeah.
That's him.
That was hilarious. That was hilarious.
I seem to play kooky characters or somebody that almost dies. That happens a lot in the things that I do.
But one of them I think was really great was you were in a fight scene with one play. And it was so I remember you were sitting around a table, and four or five of you guys, you were sitting around a table, and I can't remember if this was Elephant Size. Mm-hmm. That one was really good.
Yeah.
That one was really good.
Yeah. That was an impactful show too, because it really is about five guys that are from different walks of life, and they all come together. They don't even know why they come together, they just show up. And they all talk about problems that they're having. And the scene you're talking about was where an individual was finding out that his life was falling apart. His wife was leaving him. And he finds out that the lawyer that's actually suing him is in the room. He's one of the new members of the group. And he kind of loses it a little bit, threatens to cut his own arm off to give the guy his pound of flesh, and goes crazy and throws stuff. And I seem to be able to do that well on stage. I actually won an award. I actually won an award for that show. So I'm like, well, just give me something to throw and I'll win an award. That's great. So I'm either throwing stuff, screaming at somebody, or almost dying. And it seems like that seems to work out. But that kind of answer. Yeah. And that was an impactful show too, because it really showed how men can come together and really support each other, which is not exactly what's kind of accepted very easily in our society. So that was an impactful show. I did one, you're asking about one of my favorite shows. I did one called Wait Until Dark, and it was actually a 1960s movie as well, with Audrey Hepburn and Alan Arkin. And I played Alan Arkin's character, and he's kind of a real dark character. And that one I get stabbed, but I might not die. You don't know when the stage goes dark. So, but that was a really challenging role, and it was something, considering Alan Arkin did a great job with it, for me to step in and play a role that somebody's done is pretty big. I mean, you were kind of in the same position with Brick, because Paul Newman, Cat in a Hot Tin Roof. I mean, that's a classic too. So when we threw you up there, we knew that you were going to have to deal with all that stuff going on. But yeah, there's been a lot of different shows that have impacted me. We just did one called Safe, which is about five people locked in a safe, and basically they have to figure out what they need to do. And just like people in a normal situation, sometimes perception of how you think things are going is not exactly reality. You jump to conclusions and make decisions based on some really bad information. And that's what happens. And then I almost die in that one too. So at the end, because I made some bad assumptions. But yeah, and once again, it's telling different stories. And that's so, yeah, I think I enjoy every show I'm in for different reasons. I also did this winter. I did It's a Wonderful Life. I played Mr. Gower. In fact, I had to slap my own son around, which, you know, that was okay. But he played young George Bailey during the, you know, the druggist scene where he has the drugs that might kill the boy that's sick. And, you know, TJ, my son, and I did that role. And, you know, that's pretty impactful to show that just a little act of stepping in like George Bailey did can really affect someone's life. You get to see later how Mr. Gower's life would have been ruined if he would have made one mistake and somebody caring enough to step up and stand up in front of him and say, hey, you know, you're making a mistake. Was a big moment, and that's what we kind of need. We need people to be able to do that in real life, and that's why I like the stories that I'm able to be part of, because they usually do have a moment where somebody has to step up and do something to make a change, you know.
I like it. And so let's talk about Silent Torment.
All right.
Silent Torment, how did you come up with the idea? How did you because, I mean, I've written a book. Actually, I've written two books.
Oh, two books.
But I mean, it's a little bit different than, like, you have to really, like, what is this person going to say?
Yeah.
Like, and how, I guess a better question was first, before you come up with that idea, how hard is it really? I mean, from an author standpoint, it's got to be pretty tough. But from your standpoint, it might come easy. How hard is it? How difficult is it to write even a one-act play, scripting all the lines, going through the story, because the story has to unfold, right? So walk us through that, man. That's got to be tough.
It has a lot to do with, of course, the message you want to tell. And so you have to think about what characters you need to tell that story. And so what you need to do is you need to define that character's characteristics, their personality, and you have to make sure you know that person, because you can't have a person with a certain personality saying things that they wouldn't say. That's why people sometimes criticize, like, some, you know, cussing that's in plays. Well, you, depending where a person's walk of life is, that's how they would talk. You know, they wouldn't be realistic if you had them say dang or darn. That's not where they come from. So the first thing you have to do is you have to define that character. And once you define the character, now you know their behavior. So when you write their lines, you'll know how they'll present their communication, how they'll talk to people. If they're, you know, a snotty teenager, well, you know how they're going to talk, how they're going to, you know, if they're going to be disrespectful, whatever it is, you have to define them. And that was, to be honest with you, that was one of the most difficult things with Steven, who's the younger veteran in Silent Torment. He's the one that is just come back from a really terrible experience. It was injured in Afghanistan, and he has PTSD. There's no doubt about it. The problem with PTSD is there is a lot of different characteristics to it. And I did not want to make Steven, you know, 200 different characteristics. That's not realistic. So you have to pick out, I have to pick out those characteristics that I wanted to make him portray throughout the whole play. And you have to stick to that. You have to be honest about it the whole play. And so when I created him, it took a lot of thought. And I actually wrote an outline that was about 25 pages first, because I wanted to make sure that I knew where I was going with the characters. And then there's Roger, who is the older Vietnam vet, who I kind of portrayed a little bit after my father, because my dad will talk to talk to anybody, very talkative, very friendly person. And he was a little bit easier to write, but Steven was difficult and sometimes emotional to write, because I could feel his pain in a lot of situations. There were times I had to stop writing for a little while because it was just difficult, because you get drawn into these characters, and yes, they're characters on paper, but just like, you know, being in a show, they feel like real people. Mm-hmm. And the more real you can make them, the more their voice will become real when you write down the lines. And then when they're delivered on stage, you can really get across the emotion of the character. So that aspect is the most difficult part. Then you, of course, get into all the logistics of where you're going to have people enter and exit and who's going to be on stage. And to kind of help ourselves with that, we actually did a walkthrough in a local theater. And the first time I had the script finalized, And it was kind of comical because I had people saying lines that I had exiting. I didn't realize I had them leave. And so you have to really realize where everybody is at that time. When you have 8-9 characters on a stage, you have to be able to figure out, you know, who's going to say what and are they actually there and when should they leave and what side. It does. The play went through maybe like literally 10, 12 edits.
Oh, wow.
Just because you kept catching stuff. And you could probably still edit it now, but you've got to stop at a certain point. Like, you know, as an author, you've got to stop. But that is the difficult part, is being able to visualize mentally what's going on and to be able to make those adjustments in the script. But once you kind of get a hold of the characters and understand what they are as you write, you get their voice. The character gets a voice, and then you speak with that voice when you write. Of course, when you have multiple characters and you're going back from one person to the other, now you're speaking one type of perspective and then with one voice, another type of perspective with another voice. So it does take some time, and the play took almost 2 years to write. So it was, it was a little bit of a bear, but I enjoyed writing parts of it, and I was kind of inspired to do it initially because I know that a lot of people that I have come in contact with have PTSD, and we talked about it. And the thing about PTSD, as I mentioned earlier, is that it's a lot like somebody who has intellectual disabilities. It's different for everybody. It's nothing you can just say, this person's got a broken finger or whatever. It's not specific. To some people, it affects every aspect of their lives. Some people, it affects little small pieces of their lives. Some people, they don't even realize how they've changed. That's kind of the way I portrayed Steven, is he wasn't aware of his changes. So, That's the difficult part with PTSD. And so when I started to put the story together to deal with it, I wanted it to be something that educated people. And so as it came together, and I started writing it, I think August of 2015, I think it was. And when it came together, that's what I wanted to portray. I wanted Steven to be in different social situations, like with his mother or his girlfriend or peers, and to show how it was dysfunctional. And unfortunately, relationships with people that are close is kind of where the first damage happens, because there's an emotional connection. And usually that's family members will notice right off that there's something wrong. You know, strangers won't. And that's another aspect of PTSD that I've noticed in my research is we talk about the suicides and all that. Well, I firmly believe that a lot of that comes from people being prematurely judged. You have a lot of situations where PTSD will come across as people being short-tempered, or they're antisocial, or they're whatever. And so people don't want to deal with them. They cast them off.
Right.
That causes depression. They get isolated, and they get down, and then that's it. And so those dysfunctions, those social dysfunctions and relationship dysfunctions, are what we try to portray in Silent Torment so people can identify them. So I really want the audience to be able to sit there and say, oh, okay, I see where this can go. I see where this can manifest itself. And then, of course, we also bring in Roger, the older vet, and he starts to show Steven how to deal with these things and how to cope and use different mechanisms and different methods to get better. And it gives him that hope. And once that hope starts to happen, that's where healing can take place. And that's another thing we want to show. This play I wanted to show was hope. You know, there is hope for people with PTSD. And I'm on different PTSD Facebook pages and things like that. And I listen to a lot of people, and not all of them are military. That's the thing. In the play, we also talk about Rogers, who lost her husband to like a violent car accident. And she's talking to Steven about how she dealt with her PTSD. And obviously that's not military related, but she wanted him to understand that, you know, what she was going through and how she coped with it. And so there's a lot of people with civilian life who've either dealt with car accidents or a violent situation or a rape or even witnessing an accident, anything like that. It can cause that kind of damage. And some people don't even know that's affected them, honestly.
Wow. So – wow. I mean, you bring up a lot of great points. Wow. I think what really stands out is the way that you said you had to develop the characters, because they have to be this way. They have to be this way, because you wouldn't, you know, so when I was cast, and, you know, as Brick, I had to do these certain things because that's Brick's character. And so I learned that you have to step into the role, like you have to put yourself there. And I didn't quite understand what that meant. And then Tony got on me and he was yelling and yelling and yelling. And then I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. He's like, you're there. You're getting mad. You're getting upset. Like, that's how you have to be. I'm like, yes, I'm getting mad. And he's like, good. This is the emotion that I need. I'm like, I get it. So he's trying to draw it out of you.
Yeah, you can't pretend to be angry.
Right.
You have to be that way. And that's when you can step into the character's emotions.
Right. And I remember the day that he got me to that moment. You know what I mean?
I think you cried.
I cried. I did. I stopped. I turned around and I was like crying. I was like, I freaking hate you. He's like, good. Good. And I'm like, huh. And then he pulled me aside later on and he's like, man, he's like, this is what it takes. Like, I know it's tough for you. And believe me, I've been doing this for 20 years. He says, I get it, man. I get it. But this is this. He's like, develop that switch. Turn it on, turn it off. Right.
Yep.
And so you have to pull. And so he gave me that moment. He's like, do it like this. When you go to that spot, think of something, draw those emotions from that one experience. And then I had something to go back to. I had that place.
Yep.
Right.
Relation. Yep.
Right. So, you know, I understand, you know, when you talk about the character development and everything, and doing something like this, that is so close to you on a personal level.
Yeah.
Right. And then putting it onto paper, what was it like when somebody said, let's do the play? Like, let's do this. What was that like?
You know, when people ask me that question, the first thing that came to mind is it was shock. It was complete shock because I had just put feelers out to different places and the play had been turned down in North Carolina at different places. I didn't really get really into it, but there were three or four different places I talked to and they just weren't interested. It had never been produced before. And then I sent a message out to CRE Outreach and I didn't really think much would happen because it was out there in Los Angeles and I just didn't think they'd be interested. But they're Veterans Empowerment Theater out there. That's exactly what they do, is they tell veteran stories. And I really was excited about that because what they do is they allow veterans to tell their personal stories on stage, but they turn it into a script and it allows them therapeutically to be able to talk about things that they probably wouldn't have a chance to talk about. So when I read all about CRE Outreach and what they did with veterans, I was really inspired. And so when I got a call from Greg Shane, who is the artistic director and the co-founder of CRE Outreach, and all of a sudden he's talking to me on the phone. And he was like, hey, I heard about your show and we're interested in reading the script. And I said, oh, okay. And who are you? You know, who are you again? So I sent it to him. I said, well, yeah, I'll email it to you. It's copywritten and everything. And here you go. An hour and 27 minutes later, and I never remembered numbers. You know that.
Yeah.
An hour and 27 minutes later, he texted me back and said, I love the script. I want to do it. And I was in shock. I was total shocked. I was like, and the funny part is he didn't even know I was in North Carolina. Because he said, hey, we're doing a show right now called Marching On. You know, we can give you a comp ticket. You can come see it. And I said, well, I'm in North Carolina. He goes, oh, well, do you still want to do the show in Los Angeles? I said, yes, I do. Of course I do. I'd love to have it. I think it was made to be out there. And there's been a lot of signs for me. And, you know, I'm a Christian man. And I do believe that this show is supposed to be at this place. It is where veterans are able to tell their stories. And even though these people that I've created aren't real, there is somebody out there that is just like these characters. There's people out there that are just like Roger and just like Steven. And I feel like we're going to be telling their story, even though they won't be on stage. We'll be telling their story. And just being told that was going to happen was really exciting for me. And Greg and I have talked a lot. And I've actually, I don't know if I told you, but I've actually been able to talk to some of the characters, or some of the guys playing the characters. Like, I've been talking to a guy named Jesse who's playing Steven, and he was a Marine medic for a while, and he has suffered with PTSD from different things he experienced, and he is playing Steven, and he was very excited about the role and has asked me a lot of questions about it. And honestly, I didn't give him a lot of answers. I told him, you know what, you need to figure out who Steven is for yourself, and you need to be able to portray who you think Steven is. Use what you think and use what you feel, your experiences. And I think that the fact that it's all veterans that are going to be in Veteran Empowerment Theater in my show, I think that makes it really special. And that's why I was really excited to have it there at the Blue Door. And to clarify what you're saying earlier, so Sierra Outreach has different outreaches underneath it. They have one called Rex and Friends that has a he's an autistic savant who plays the piano, and he has different guys that have different intellectual disabilities that actually perform with him. They have Veterans Empowerment Theater, which I said is all veterans. They also have a theater for the blind, which I'm really impressed with. I got to see one of the rehearsals, and they have all blind people with different visual impairments on stage, but they're playing sighted characters. I mean, you know how difficult it is to play a character. You imagine being blind and playing someone who has sight. And that's what these guys do. And so, I mean, they're impressive. So Sierra Outreach serves their community. They actually, I think, pay their actors and they support their actors and they feed them. And it's more than just a theater. It's a place that supports people and helps them out, you know, when they need it. And I really respect what they do out there in Culver City. So, the whole experience of finding out about it was going to be produced was really exciting. And we are excited to go on out and be there. I didn't know if you wanted me to bring that up, but so we're leaving on the 20th of April, and the show opens on the 26th. That'll be the opening show. Me and my children are going out there. We're going to help set up the lobby. And I think there's seven, it's going to be seven shows from April 26th to May 11th. It's going to be Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, except May 5th. I'm not going to have a show that day. And then the Sunday shows are at 3 p.m. So, and if anybody has any questions about it, they can go to either the Blue Door, Blue Door of Culver City, or they can go to CRE Outreach Facebook page, and they have a link for all that kind of stuff.
Very cool, man.
Yeah, sorry.
Very cool. So, again, April 26th through May 11th in Culver City, California, Dan's original play, Silent Torment, will be live. And the coolest thing is that it's performed by veterans.
Oh, yeah. All veterans.
It's performed by veterans. And that's got to be the coolest feeling, right? Like, it's not just anybody playing these characters. It's people who – which, again – you know, for veterans listening, you know what it's like to get in the same room as other veterans, right? I mean, you could be at a networking event, you could be at a church, you could be at the grocery store, whatever. You see people that you serve with, you're like, hey, what's happening? Like, how you been? And like, it's just, there's that brotherhood that's been established. There's a camaraderie that's been established. And for your original work, your play, to be then taken all the way to California and played by other veterans who may or may not have, mostly they, it sounds like they do, have PTSD, again, it's just that connection is being made. And that's got to be the coolest thing. And you said before that nothing's wasted and you feel like there's something that you should be doing. You weren't doing, you didn't feel inside that you were doing it. This is it.
Oh, yeah.
This is, yeah. Like, this is, and it's been building since, what, 2015, you said. I mean, this is it. This is what you're supposed to be doing.
Well, I also think this is the beginning, to be honest with you, because I want this show to be out there. This isn't about monetary gain for me. This isn't about anything financial. This is about putting out a story I think can help people. And once it's produced there, I'm hoping to get it produced in North Carolina. That's one of my short-term goals. My long-term is to get it actually published so it can be produced at any theater all around the country, because I think that the information in it is helpful for people and educational. The other part of the show that we didn't mention is that in the show, there's a incident mentioned at that happened at Benoit Air Base. And the reason I brought that into it is because in May 16th of 1965, there was a major incident. It was non-combat related, and the flight line basically blew up. A lot of people aren't aware of the incident because it was during the Vietnam War, and it kind of got blended into all the other carnage that was going on then. And 27 men were killed. And 40 aircraft were destroyed, and over 100 men were injured. It was the worst ground incident ever happened in Air Force history, and it's never been surpassed as far as the death toll and damage. That's why we have a lot of the safety rules we do have in the Air Force is because of the incident at Benoit. And I really wanted to show I wanted to respect and remember the men, the 27 men that died. And I've been in my script, I actually dedicated the script to those 27 in the lobby at the Blue Door Theater. We're actually going to have a display with all their pictures. I actually have pulled up pictures, and we're going to have pictures, their names, their jobs, so people can remember these men. So Roger, who is the older character, that he witnessed that experience. And if you've never seen the video, you can look up the Benoit disaster on YouTube. It shows what really happened. It was a horrible day, and it affected a lot of people. It changed a lot of people's lives. And even though Roger's a fictional character, I know the men that were on the flight line that day, I'm sure will never forget what they saw. And so Roger talks about what he saw on the flight line and how it impacted him. And we think that the dedication is important because we don't want to forget these guys. And that's why the pictures are important. Their families, I'm sure, even now miss them. And so if you do go on my Facebook page for Silent Torment, this I have started a thing where every day I'm putting pictures of these individuals, what they did, where they're from, and so we can honor them a little bit and remember them. And so every production of Silent Torment that's done, there will be all these names in the playbill, and all the information that happened, so people can learn a little bit about the sacrifice that these men made, that morning. And that was important to me too, because I saw the video when I was in the Air Force. It was a weapons training safety video, and it really impacted me to see what happened to people that were doing their job, just like you and I do. Crew chiefs died like you, weapons guys died like me, pilots died, a guy that was a Thunderbird pilot died, and so these were people that had families and they were friends with people, and I just wanted that to be remembered as well. So that was something I worked into the script, and we have really highlighted that in everything we've done on the Facebook page with Siri Outreach. We just want that part of it to be highlighted as well, because it's really important that we remember people that lost their lives for our country.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. And man, yeah, that's got to be, again, tough. It's got to be tough when you're writing this, knowing that this is what has transpired, knowing that this has happened. Like, this is a real event. A real event happened. And it's just it's tough, especially in the veteran community, when you hear about things that happened a long time ago, especially like Air Force related stuff, when, you know, Dan and I are both Air Force veterans, we hear things and see things and do things, and, you know, it does take a toll on you. You know, there's a lot of times where people says, oh, it's the chair force, and we have inner service, you know, fights about, oh, you're just bullet sponges, you guys are the season. But when it comes down to it, we're all veterans, we're all family, we all care and love about each other. And when these things happen, it's just like, it's a somber remembrance of the things that we go through. And that's why you said safety things are in place, and yeah, a lot of things are in place now. And I like that this is the vehicle that you've used, the community theater and the theatrical plays. I like that this is the vehicle that you've chosen, and you could have done a dedication video, or you could have done a speaking tour, or you could have written a book, or you could have done it. But this is going to be like personally involving a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I'm in awe, man. I really am. And I like, you know, that this is what you've chosen. And I think it's amazing. So let's do this. Let's plug. I do a shameless plug on the show. So let's do a shameless plug. You can plug friends, quotes, websites, Facebook, people that you want to give a shout out to, whatever it is that you want to know or want the audience to know and to do. This is your moment. So you want to plug websites, community outreach, you want to plug, you know, the YouTube video where they can find the thing, you know, whatever you want the audience to know and to do, this is your moment. Shameless plug, go.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks.
<Tina. laughs>
I knew you were going to put me on the spot for something. All right, well, the bad part is, you know, my memory is terrible, so you set me up to get websites and things. But I guess the thing I would like to plug is I would like people to actually look up this disaster that happened in May 16, 1965. There is a lot of information about it. There is there's definitely a couple of good YouTube videos. I don't know exactly what they are, but if you look up the Benoit Air Disaster 1965, it'll come up. And to me, that's Maybe that's not the plug you're looking for, but for me, I want people to be educated about that incident because it is so forgotten and most people have never heard of it. I even talked to people that were actually in Vietnam and they didn't remember hearing anything about it. So for me, to honor those men, if you if you're listening to the show, go on out there and take a look at what happened in this incident. It was something that impacted a lot of families and a lot of people, and it was one of those kind of senseless death situations that really was no one's fault. And I think it's good that we remember those people and that we know about what happened to men that were out there like that. So go ahead, take a look at that. Go on out to YouTube and take a look at Benoit. It's spelled B-I-E-N space H-O-A, airbase. And the incident happened May 16th, 1965. If you look it up, there's lots of information. I did a lot of research on this, so I know there's a lot of information out there. That's how I got the names of the individuals that passed away. So to do a little, just honor these men by going out there and educate people on what happened in this incident. I did want to point out something you said earlier that I really thought about is a lot of people do look at different forces, different and different jobs. And that's one of the problems that happens in my show is that Steven really thinks that Roger's just some old jerk that because he worked at a mess hall and that's what he did. And prejudging people and minimizing what their experiences are and their struggles is something that a lot of people do. You know, you don't know, you weren't there. But once he hears that and he didn't have respect for Roger, that's the problem. And I think in our world, we have to understand everybody has a different walk. And you had your walk and I've had mine. And we all have something we can teach people. We can tell people about. We can educate people about. So one of the storylines in this is don't judge people by what you think you know about them, because that's exactly what Steven does to Roger. And in the end, when he finds out what Roger's been through, it really impacts him to realize that he had a resource right there, somebody who really cared, really understood what it was like. And that's when they really bond and Steven is able to really learn from Roger. So this whole incident, even though it doesn't seem like the play is circled around the incident, it really is, because it's created Roger to be the person he is. If he wouldn't have gone through the situation, he would not be as good as he is in helping other people, because that's exactly what he does. He realizes that he has been through something everybody else has been. He's going to take that pain and he's going to do something productive with it. And that's why I really love Roger as a character, because he realizes that he has so much to give other people. And so we have to realize everyone does have something to give, and their story is important not only to them, but to other people. And so we need to be careful of that when we're talking to people that we think we understand. And that happens a lot with PTSD, where people are prejudged because of their, like I said, antisocial behavior, right, and things like that. And that's where Roger sees through all that. Yeah. He's been there, so he can see through the way Steven treats people and realizes that's just a symptom. That's not who Steven really is. That's just a symptom of the pain that he's carrying around. So I'd like to kind of point that out. But yeah, go on out there, take a look at this incident and educate yourself and talk to people and talk to your family members about it, and just so they understand what happened. And I'm kind of hoping someday they either do a movie or something about the incident. I've never seen anything about it, but there was a lot of heroes that day. If you don't mind, I want to point one out. Yeah. Actually, there was a text.